Shopping Maniacs, you're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show, a podcast all about front-end web design and development. I am Dave. What's going on in this world, Rupert? And with me is Chris Coyer. Hey, Chris, how are you?
Yeah, it's a hell of a week to be doing this. I feel like everybody couldn't stop talking about damn COVID-19 and all the lives that it's taking. And now all of a sudden we have George Floyd getting murdered in Minnesota and the world in a bad place because of that. So I would just say that, like, we're going to do this show and we're going to talk about web technology. And if you're just not up for it, then, you're not ready to hear about web stuff. And I said this in the CSS Tricks newsletter too, just like, don't listen to it then. And it's okay to, like, mute us, move on, delete, unsubscribe, get this away from you. If you can't stomach it right now, that's understandable. So I know I've been trying to, like, research the best things I can do. And it's very gut wrenching because I don't know how best to use what little I have, you know. But I've been finding organizations to donate to. I found one about police reform that I thought spoke to me well, that was like, this is good. They have a plan. They really, like, understand what's happening here and know how to use the money that I'm about to give them, and I'm happy to do that. So I did that, and I've been listening to the ones that other people suggest that are definitely way smarter than me about who needs it right now, and trying to donate to those as well. So that's been my strategy.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm in the same boat. I'm very much, like, listening, you know. This like social justice or just even the dignity of human beings is very much something I believe in and care about. And so, so when I see rioting and big protests and things like that, like I know there's a human instinct in some people to be like, they're doing a bad, but I think you have to look at the underlying subtext of what went wrong. This doesn't just happen out of anywhere. What went wrong? And try to listen to the right voices, who are experts in this. And that's what I've been trying to do. I'm giving my money where I can, to, like you said, organizations who kind of have been in it for a while and are trying to figure it out. And I think we should say, you know, here on Shop Talks, we do believe that Black Lives Matter. And you may be like, oh, this is a political podcast now. And I feel like it's a very apolitical statement. I mean, I feel like you're just saying that people matter, people of color matter. And I don't think that should be a controversial statement. So if you disagree with that, like,
my God, I had to go on Twitter today, and they're all the trending hashtags were all these. I don't even want to mention them because I've heard people say that even mentioning the names of these stupid movements is harmful in itself, even when they're subverted and taken over by people just trying to shut them down. The name of the movements is then still up in your face. Mm-hmm. So I don't even want to say it. But anyway. Yeah. Did you read Barack's Medium article? I can't believe he posts on Medium, yeah. But yeah.
He needs his own blog, let's be honest. But it was nice that...
I will make Barack Obama's
the blog. President blogged. It was very nice to have a president.
That we will put together a diverse staff of developers to build your Barack Obama. I will...
Barack.
Barack.
Barack. Barack Obama.
That's okay, the best. I did it. I like what he had to say here. He said, on the other hand, a small minority of folks who've resorted to violence in various forms, whether out of genuine anger or mere optimism, are putting innocent people at risk, compounding the destruction of neighborhoods that are already short on services and investment, and detracting from the larger cause. I saw an elderly Black woman be interviewed today in tears because the only grocery store in her neighborhood had been trashed. If history is any guide, that store may take years to come back. So let's not excuse violence or rationalize it or participate in it if we want our criminal justice system and American society at large to operate on a higher ethical code. Then we have to model that code ourselves. I always like how he speaks in that way about, you know, you need to, it's action that matters. You have to do the thing that you want other people to do.
Yeah, I agree. And maybe we just leave it there because, you know, we're not experts in this. And you can even look at Shop Talk, like the guests we've had on, a majority white, you know, probably majority male. And so that is, you know, we're in some ways part of the problem. We work hard to not be that, and we are conscious of it. But yeah, even still. So we're trying to get better, and we actively do work on this stuff. So
yeah, for sure.
Just know that we're working on that.
We'll do better. So, you know, I'm going to put an HR element into the show at the moment. Mm-hmm. I'm sure Chris Enns will put an actual timestamp or something here, and we'll now talk about technology, the focus of this program. We have some questions from guests that'd be fun to get into. All kinds of good ones coming in lately. I'd encourage you to. I think maybe the redesign of the site so far has encouraged that, because there's a big Ask Us link in the header, like there should be, and that brings up a form. And of course, we love it when you have questions for us, and you can feel free to just submit topics too, just things that you just think are interesting happening in the world of building websites that you just could imagine weighing in on or hearing Dave and I talk about. That's kind of a fine thing too. It doesn't necessarily have to end in the question mark character. You know what I'm saying?
You can ask us about Banjo, or
sure.
It doesn't even have to be tech, to be honest. I don't care.
I bought a new one.
I did too, but it's getting built. It got shut down by COVID. I told you that though.
Oh yeah.
I told everyone here that.
But that is that the D-ring or no?
The D-ring, long neck. Yep.
Do they do custom or is it? I always think of D-ring as like a big manufacturer. Like, you know.
They are, but I think they have. I don't think they keep a lot of long neck banjos on the rack.
I bet not.
I think they have the shell. They have the neck. They need to. Whatever, bolt them together.
I've never even touched a long neck. Is it in a different key then, or is it so long that it's just an octave down?
So your standard banjo is in a G key.
Yeah.
Welcome to Banjo Talk. I'm Dave.
It's an E. It looks like
so. It goes to E, and so you, if you want to play in G, you capo 3, just like a guitar would. Ooh, you know.
Yeah.
And so you can drop down to E to play with maybe somebody who's playing a guitar or something like that a little easier. Cause like,
yeah, playing but then if you're going to do that all the time, why'd you buy a long neck? You know?
Well, you can just, you get like two or three or four keys, you know, like drop C or whatever, like sure, on a banjo. Yeah. So you could like drop it and get into like drop D, I guess would be.
Yeah. It's more built for that.
Yeah. It's more, a little more. Versatile, and I think it was a Pete Seeger kind of invention. So
yeah. Oh my god, these conspiracy theorist Twitter accounts try to hammer me the other day that were I thought of him because Pete Seeger had "This Machine Kills Fastest" on his guitar, and I always thought that was fucking awesome.
But that was Woody Guthrie.
It was Woody Guthrie, but you know what? There's some crossover there. I think
Woody and Pete Seeger were buddies a lot. They maybe even like traveled on rail cars together. But Pete Seeger's banjo said, "This machine surrounds hate and forces it to surrender." I think surrounds hate with love. Hold on, banjo. Here it is. I'll find it here. It's Pete Seeger banjo. This machine surrounds hate and forces it to surrender, and it has a peace sign on it. And he like hand drew on his little banjo head, but it was very much like in the like
the spirit of Woody Guthrie
of thing. "This Machine Kills Fastest." It was very similar. So.
I had it as a decal, which I just bought online and put on my laptop, and so there's a lot of pictures with me. With that laptop open, like at conferences and stuff. And if you crop them just right, it's my face and the word fascists. And this guy like spent a lot of time making sure that he had these photos. Which like it's in the same font as the Woody Guthrie one. Like it doesn't take a genius journalist to figure out what that sticker was happening there. I'll tell you though, E chord. That's wild. As I play a lot of old time music, I'd say like there's an awful lot of old time in A, an awful lot in D, and G, of course, is kind of the standard tuning. Once in a hot minute, you'll play a C tune because it's like because in D you capo up to two, and it's like that same tuning, you just with uncapoed. But I've never once played an old time tune in E. But you know, that's just old time. There's well, plenty of folk and blues.
I think that's
heavy
it.
On E.
Yeah, I think it's sort of like if you wanted to play like Lead Belly or something like that.
Hell yeah!
You know, you just like get down to there. So it just, I don't know. It's just something I've been fascinated with. And, you know, for the most of its life, it'll be a capo three, you know, just a regular banjo and G, but, you know.
It's also just striking looking.
Striking. That's right. It just looks, it's cool. It's big. It's a big boy banjo for a big boy like me.
Do you have a service worker in production anywhere?
Oh yeah. Heck yeah. DaveRupert.com.
Really? Is it for offline or what does it do?
Does offline stuff and then caches assets. That's sort of, I think my big thing is
really asset caching.
I'm big on network first for documents. Like your HTML is network first, but your assets would all be service worker first. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It sort of falls apart when you actually get into single page apps. I've had it like go very bad. Mm. And you almost want to network first on single page apps just because I don't know what it was, but I was getting like a flash pop in Firefox and stuff like that. And I think it and I don't think it was Firefox. I think it just was like the service worker was delivering the JavaScript like before something, you know, it just was happening too fast or something. And so it just created a glitch. And so I kind of had to back out of.
SPAs is what hurt you.
I think just because, you know, your whole thing is a JavaScript file. And so I think if you get it, that's the sort of the thing, too, is if you get like a stale JavaScript file, like that can be bad in a single page app, you know, like.
Yeah. I see you got CloudFront in front of your assets, too. So it's network. It's service worker first, then CDN. That's nice.
Yeah. Well, that's Netlify doing that for me.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah. And so. So yeah, but the
Netlify uses CloudFront, really?
That's really surprising, but
isn't it? At least not even obscure the URL. I think it.
Yeah. I don't. Yeah.
Weird.
Oh, maybe some like certain assets. No, that's what it looks like. It's rewriting it to CloudFront.
So what if you want to? Your little like warrior bard guy here. You want to put a backwards hat on him?
Newshammer.
Sorry.
Yes.
Do you?
He's defender of news websites, Chris. He's the lord of news websites, and he will bring them back to justice and performance. And,
he's the Michael content. Donahoe of.
He's news hammer. He will bring news back to its rightful place in the world.
Oh, that's great. So, is your setup such that you could just put a new WebP in your local host and ship it and it just updates? Or do you have to manually update a web worker that says, ooh, I changed this graphic. I'm going to ship a new version of my service worker because it has a new URL for this asset.
You know, I would, oh, good question. So I would usually try to add it to the service worker if I feel like it's a critical asset. Like I used to have it, when it was very big, I used to make sure it was in the service worker just because I wanted second hits to be as fast as possible to the homepage. Like that asset's not going to change that often. I just wanted it to be as fast as possible the next time.
Is the service worker even better than browser cache? Because a second hit, you'd think browser cache would have it, and then that's that, you know?
Yeah, browser cache would have it, but it's more like a, you know, and this kind of gets into that recent WebKit change in the service worker.
It'll happen for a week. Or whatever.
Until like somebody decides, whatever, until the garbage man or the street sweeper comes by and makes you move your car or whatever. Because it would like do like a 1 week cleanup or something like that. But you know, I think the idea is it's in a more like a bit more of a cold storage on the device, you know, on the client. And so, so it could be readily accessed. And so that's what I would do. You know, some people go overboard. I mean, I don't think there's a limit right now or like 40 megabytes is the limit before it even says anything. And so, you know, I think that's like something. There's things I've been considering doing. Like, you know, you go to my homepage, you get 5 article lists, I think, on the homepage or something like that. I doubt anyone's going to click through all 5 articles, but like, you know, I could like programmatically do caches.add or whatever it is and add those five posts to the cache. So like instantly. So they're already there preloaded, basically the HTML, at least before you even get there. So
that's pretty cool. So that's where my mind, you know, that's a huge use case of service workers, right? Is this offline stuff, like how incredible that is. And then there's, but I think all along the messaging was pretty good by the creators that it's like, it's just a lower level API. I mean, you can do all kinds of stuff with this and it gives you this powerful kind of middleman layer to manipulate things. So another thing that it's not just for cache. You could also pluck it out of cache and run a query selector statement, you know, find the H1 on your page and 50-50 it with another different H1. You could do that. You could do that.
Yeah.
You could, you know, you could implement your CDN with a service worker. You could say, you know, find all the URL requests that are this URL. And then instead of sending it to doing a fetch for its normal location, just change out the, you know, the host name to where the CDN is instead. So you just have this middleman, which is just so cool. You know, Andy Bell just this morning, I think he's probably going to do a post on this, showed me how he uses a service worker to intercept the URL to either serve the logged out kind of pre-sale page. That's like, hey, you could have access to this content if you paid for it, but you haven't. So here's the sales page. And then if you're logged in and authenticated, which is, it knows via, you know, kind of like a token that it has storage of, the service worker then replaces that content with the logged in version of that. Like how rad is that, you know, cause it has like a different environment variable it can latch onto. So how powerful is that? You know, now it has nothing to do with caching. It has to do with manipulating the HTML before it gets shown in the browser.
No, it's kind of a cool, like, I mean, it, the limitation is you have to load the site first. The service worker, the site has to load and then the service worker gets registered. So it's always a second hit technology, if that makes sense. It's a second visit technology. That said, it's really powerful. Like you could do a cloud to butt and rewrite every instance of the word cloud to butt on your website just through a service worker. I mean, it, you know, it's very cool. Like you can manipulate responses. You can, you know, I have one or had not on this site, but on Daytrip, I think it was, you know, which was very cool because it was a site that was designed to go out into the woods. Right. And so the chances of you running out of network connectivity was very, very high. And so we would cache everything we could, but then if we, you know, didn't get a response, like the fetch request failed, we would send back an SVG with like an X in it as like a couldn't find the image. So instead of like a broken image placeholder or something like that, you got like an SVG, like, you know, offline or something, you know, you could make it say whatever you want in the SVG. And that's like a three lines of code to like serve back an SVG instead of a broken image. And how cool is that? That's
extremely, very super cool.
And then even there, like we could, you know, if we knew, let's say you had some favorite spots, we could cache all your favorite spots in the thing and in the cache through some query. And those would always be loaded for you. You'd always have access even in the woods to your like favorite spots. So if you needed like information or tips or whatever, you know, that app is kind of atrophied on the vine as we've started working on something else. But like, but it was very cool to experiment with that technology in that context because it was designed just for it. And I remember driving across Iowa with my parents one time, like while we were making it, and I was just like checking it and I just couldn't get anything. And I just was like, I need a service worker because I just was getting white screens while it was waiting to load, you know? And that's where I come back to like,
that's an area where they're like, because what I wanted to get here to is kind of comparing them to Cloudflare workers, or Netlify has some edge stuff and these services that can do similar things, but they do it instead of you doing it.
Yeah, a service worker. So it happens at your CDN, or your server, I guess, in front of your server.
But they can't do the offline stuff because that needs to happen at the browser level, you know. But it's these other things that you might need to do, they can almost do better. Because for one thing, a service worker needs to get installed, so it has to be on the network once. Whereas in these cases, they don't. This executes on the very first request, you know, which is kind of rad. And they have access to data store stuff too. So it's like, holy crap, how cool is that? You know, like we've started using it at CodePen. I think there's an episode about this, but it's like we can do this thing like, we have a URL for the screenshot of an image. And this has evolved like 5 times throughout the history of CodePen, but now it can just be like a URL. Like we don't have to, set up a whole queuing service that takes these screenshots and put them in a bucket and has this URL resolved to that location. All this, just the URL itself can do it. The URL itself can like hit a worker first, and the worker can do the work it needs to do to generate the screenshot, put it in a bucket, and cache it. And it caches it with like a key value store. Like, I've got this one. Don't try to regenerate it again. That way, the very first time that image is ever requested, it can generate the screenshot on the fly, put it in a bucket, and now it's just got it. And we know it's got it through the key value store that it has it. So that it's kind of an example of how powerful that can be, you know. And you can, while you're at it, you can be like, well, let me manipulate the headers along the way, make sure it's got cores headers too, because this just, we could, you just have full control over the request. And what if you had key value stores that just had all your users' pro status in them for some, you know, are you, what tier are you? That way, and on any request, before it even hits your server, you can like be manipulating things and having that power. It's like, it's just so cool.
I think about it a lot in the A/B testing stuff. And I think Scott Gell kind of posted on this originally, just this idea, because any A/B testing technology like Optimizely or Google Optimize or Maximizer, or just to name a few that I've worked with, you have to add 300 kilobytes of blocking JavaScript or whatever they have, you know, with your like A variant and whatever B variant, and you have to block the whole page load to load this JavaScript so it doesn't flash on the page, and then it does it. Like, wouldn't it be cool if you did it at the edge and like it was all tracked on the edge and never?
Yeah, totally performance neutral testing, right?
Performance neutral testing, which is a big deal, because I don't know if you're familiar with the observer effect in physics. Are you familiar with that?
Well, like, as soon as, or in any kind of, right? Like the fact that Jane Goodall was observing the gorillas made it so that the gorilla's behavior changed. Like it was not unbiased observation.
Right, right. And so like that plays a part in A/B testing, because, you know, unless you got your big science going, and I guarantee your managers don't give you the time for that. There's a chance that your default variant ships with nothing. And I think this is how Maximizer works. And then but your A variant goes and fetches the A package and comes back with all the HTML, CSS, and JavaScript it needs to do the A package. And so the A test is always slower than the default test. And we know, like, from whatever Google studies, like, slower stuff converts worse. And so, like, if conversion is your metric you're optimizing for, not, like, clicks or something like that, we already know it's slower. We know it's going to be worse. Like, so you've inserted yourself, you know, into the test to the tools themselves are like, creating bad data. And that's not to say, like, whatever, you measure what you can measure, I think, in general, or experiment would be more my like mantra, like prototyping, like experiment a lot, you know. Sorry, I'm going tangents, but my brain's firing, so I'm going for it. I read this thing on the legend, history of the Legend of Zelda on Gamepedia or whatever, right? And they're talking, and then it bounced out to a developer article, and they were talking about the Legend of Zelda Link to the Past, which was for the Super Nintendo. It took 3 years to build. Do you want to know how those 3 years were spent? 1 year was spent designing on paper and pencil, like figuring out how it would work. Mm-hmm. 1 year was of experimentation. And then the last year was building it and shipping it and marketing it and putting it out.
Oh my God, that's the first chapter of Dave Rupert's
Book Apart book. I mean, absolutely, because it's 100% like, whoa, 33% of all product features should be experimentation. Sign me up. Like that, like, don't even think of it in those terms. Don't think of it in 2 week sprints. That's my whole jam. Like it, don't just try to get it out. I mean, sometimes you do need to get it out because you make these little mountains, or these golden calves, I'd say, in your brain, but you need to get these out. And, but like you can do that in experiments and validate with users, like A/B tests or even just prototypes and sending people links and stuff like that. Like you can validate all that stuff in experimentation so that when you do go build it, it's like you at least know you're building something smart. So that's my book. I forgot how I got to Zelda, but you can, okay. Yeah. Back to the cloud edge workers. Like you can experiment, like what if we move the button over there? Okay. Let's just like, we can do that with CSS probably easily enough, but like, I don't know. What if the button takes you to the about page instead of the contact page or something? Like that's something you could do. Like, just do that. Test that.
Yeah. It's starting to be like just as big of a talked about thing as the kind of the testing abilities of them as the offline stuff of service workers. This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by Pastel. That's usepastel.com. Follow the link in the show notes. It's about collecting feedback on real websites. So it's like you got this website, whether it's in development or production, or even if it's just a graphic of it so far, you need to get feedback on it. And Pastel makes it possible to get feedback from anybody, from people on your own team, from the wider scope of the company, from stakeholders in other companies, to anybody at all. It's like you get this URL that's like a wrapper of your website, and it's got this bar at the bottom that's like, are you browsing or commenting? So the idea is you're looking at the actual website or mock-up of it or whatever, and you can just like kind of like point at stuff and be like, see that? I got a question about that, or I think that should be different, or talk to this person about that. You're making comments on the real thing that the people who then need to deal with those things can do it. It's like this universe for that. So it eliminates like back and forth emailing instead of like, hey, check a look at this URL and then just send me back like random bullet points of that. And I guess I'll triage it then to the right people. It's like, no, this becomes the place where triage doesn't need to happen. The feedback comes into the place where it's all together from these different people and all that. It's really simple to use. It's designed for not technical people necessarily needing to do it. So you might set it up, and setting it up takes like 2 seconds. You just sign up and be like, put this URL in this thing, and now it's ready to go. It gives you this URL that you send to people for collecting that feedback, which is tremendous. So anybody can use the thing. You just point and click and you leave feedback, and that's that, which is the way feedback should be. It's just that this facilitates it kind of in the nicest possible way. And then it fits into your workflow too. So if you need integrations with other tools and stuff, like a good modern web app, it's got all that stuff. So use Pastel, follow the link in the show notes to check it out. It's very cool. Thanks. Here's another use case, though, that I think is fascinating. You know, let's say you're going to build an SPA and you're going to use a headless CMS to do it, or like some kind of just a website, you know, like you pick on purpose a static site generator for your site because you like that approach, right? You like that the pages are pre-generated and it's fast and you can deploy it to the edge and benefit from the Netlify approach and all that, right? I'm a huge fan. Great way to work. But I'm also pretty hot on WordPress still after all these years. Like, wow, what? It's server-side rendered anyway, so that's cool. I can still make it fast, I promise. You know, I just get a lot of benefit out of that. And lately, I'm just so hot on Gutenberg, which we're kind of stopping calling it Gutenberg, right? Because that's like the development plugin. It's just the block editor now, this new editor that WordPress has. I just find tremendous. It's so cool. It's so It feels so good for me to work in that environment. I feel like it's just really nice. And I'm doing this new thing now where I can use the same CSS for the content and make it load in the admin area as I do on the front page. So it's almost like,
oh wow,
trips your brain out a little bit. So you're editing the site as it 100% as if it appears on the front end of the site. It's just like an editable
typeset,
copy.
Like your site.
Yeah. Typeset like the site. All the images look like the front of the site. The columns look the same. Any special classes you're using look the same. All the blocks are just the same. So, wow, yeah. what a cool editor experience, you know? But you're like, I don't know, maybe I don't want to use WordPress on the front end. I just want to do it some other way, right? In the case this came up of CodePen, and I'm not sure if we're actually going to ship this, but it looks good. I want to build landing pages, our pro landing page, our pro feature landing pages. These are just, you know what landing pages are. They got a hero image. They got call to action buttons. They got columns full of features. You know, how many landing pages have you built in your life? Hell yeah, hell yeah. Gutenberg was born to build pages like that. It's very natural fit. I'd rather do that than have to hand build it in an ERB in Rails or whatever. But I want to serve them on the Rails side. I want them to live over there. So what's kind of cool about this is WordPress has this REST API, right? It's like you can just hit an endpoint and it will cough up the URL that the Gutenberg editor made. It's just, it couldn't be simpler to grab that HTML. So a thing you can do with a worker is, okay, I'm going to intercept this request. Just this one URL I'm going to intercept with a worker. And when it does that, I want you to perform the fetch request that you were going to anyway. So spit up a Rails shell. And in our case, a Rails shell has all this stuff. It has the footer, it has the sidebar, it has the header, all in React and all just in our normal site shell. And then it just so happens there's an empty div sitting there with an ID on it. So maybe in the past, you'd just do an Ajax request. Hit that API, get the HTML, plop it on the page. That's a little gross, though. Nobody does that anymore. They don't do it because it's like it's bad for SEO, it's bad for performance, for all the stuff we were just talking about. It's not very resilient, yada, yada, yada. You can do that same thing with a worker. The worker can intercept that request, make the network request on your behalf, which is going to happen about 10 times faster than the Ajax request would have anyway, because it's happening on these edge super powerful computers.
Server to server, not like client to server.
Yeah. Right. Grab that content and plunk it in that div. And by the time that request even gets to the computer, it's already sitting in there. So now I have landing pages on a Rails site generated by a WordPress Gutenberg site with this incredible editor experience. How cool is that? And so what it makes me think of is like, so that's static site generation. Having this worker in the middle is like that. Let's say you wanted to hit your Contentful API at the worker level. It could do that. See, it's not like you have to pre-build. Pre-building is just one approach to a static site generator thing, but it could, you could have like an SPA-ish style site without the client-side JavaScript because the worker is the thing that gets the content and stitches everything together before the request happens.
Yeah, you're doing a server. The server is generating the page. I mean, it's almost like how PHP would go look things up in a database. I mean, it's the server is doing the work and the client just gets the end product. So,
and you can be like, okay, sure. You know, now the server's got to make a network request anyway. So there's this, but you can do smart stuff if you need to. You can cache that page in key value store. Like I just talked, you can, you know, have the worker go get the content once, but then have a cache breaking mechanism and stuff. But it's almost like, why bother? You know, it's not like our landing pages for, in our case, are that so heavily trafficked that it's going to put burden on the WordPress instance. It's like
but the trade-off you're talking about is you're maintaining a Rails instance, you're maintaining a WordPress instance, and then in the middle you have a little bit of JavaScript on the edge worker to stitch those two outputs together.
It is not light on technical debt, for sure. But it is like what's happening feels like it could be. It feels like the technology is interesting here. It doesn't have to be a Rails app on one side. It could just be anything. It could just be a static div, or it could be a static HTML page.
Could be a React app. I mean, it could be anything.
And it doesn't have to be WordPress delivering that HTML either. It could be Contentful. Yeah. It could be any other number.
Another HTML file. I mean, it could be like, no, that's cool. Like, I think, it doesn't, you know, I think there's like a lot of potential. Like, I've been thinking a lot about trade-offs, and that's why I asked about it, just and complexity and where we kind of put all that stuff. And you know, what's interesting is I think back in the day, or even now, you know, it's majority server and client. Those are your two choices where you can put things, right? Like, Either the server is doing the work or the client's doing the work. But we kind of have this new kind of server in web land called the edge, you know, which is like it's a server, but it's next to the person, as close to the person as possible. You know, yeah. It's like a very, and it does tiny little jobs. And so like that's kind of a cool change or, you know, it's, you know, I'm sure there'll be like a blog post in 5 years where it's like, what are edge workers considered harmful or something like that.
Oh my God. It totally will be. But they realize how fast they really are. We're not talking about adding 200 milliseconds to a request. We're talking about adding one or 1.5. Right. It's real fast.
Yeah. I mean, and so you're kind of, it's kind of cool. So I think the big risk too is in the lot of bottleneck there would be like, if it has like personal information, like you probably can't do fancy stuff with the user's account page, you know, or something like that. But
yeah, right, right. Not always, although you'd be amazed what these key value store things can do.
Well, exactly. Yeah. If you're kind of passing over their level, like you can get kind of contextual pages, you know, or,
right. And
or
that like, worker could hit an API too. Like you have a bunch of user data in Fauna or whatever. That worker can talk to Fauna.
Mm-hmm. Well, not to like whatever analyze code, yeah. but I've seen like y'all do like little ads, like little one line ads kind of at the bottom before or something mm-hmm. like that. Is that, you know, they're at least experiment on and off with that. Like, you know, you could also do a thing where it's like, if the header has on the edge worker has the pro account, you never inject that ad, but like,
right. Rather than having to request a client side. Yeah, that's actually a really good idea. It's a great idea.
Like, so you could just, even in the shell of your application, you can just turn this ad on or off based on a user level. And that's not the, or maybe it's even whatever, anonymous versus logged in or something like that. But like, you know, that's, you know, there's potential there. I mean, I think about with my site, I could use that, you know, it's just like, right. Oh, or get back to web monetization. Here we go. If you have a Coil account, like, and I know that, and I've set a cookie or something, I'll just never show you an ad div. But if you don't, well, guess what, sucker? You're getting the ads.
Yeah, that might serve their problem. Because that is one of the problems of web monetization at the moment, is it's a little slow.
A bit slow.
Yeah, you have to, like, if you want an answer, whether this user is for sure monetizing you or not, it's, I don't know, it's a while, half a second, something like that.
Half a second, because that goes through like a browser plugin that probably waits till the page loads.
Right. So if you want to be like, don't request ads until I know the answer to this question, your ad sales are going to go way down because that's too long to wait for that answer. Like if you want perfy ads, you got to make that request right away, you know?
Well, and anyone who's worked with ads knows marketing wants that to show up before anything else. So it's always, can we make the ads faster? And you're like,
but that's edge worker stuff. Now you combine service worker stuff, meaning in some cases, you know, the requests don't have to leave your computer at all because it's caching. And then you factor in web worker stuff, which is like, oh, I need to do high computationally intense things, but I can do it network second. I could try to like hit a web worker if it exists, or if it doesn't, then hit the network. You know, the architecture of the future on the web is just so exotic. There's so much power you have. You do it all right, and you have smoking fast sites. You know?
No, I think there's a lot of potential. So it's very interesting.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by Heffler and Co. Welcome as a sponsor. I am stoked about it. They are my favorite type shop out there. The URL is one of the best URLs you could possibly imagine, typography.com. Nothing is more critical to a good web experience than just clear, clean, attractive typography, which is good news because that's not particularly hard on the web anymore. You know, type on the web has just gotten so good. It's affordable and easy to integrate. Heffler & Co. fonts are the designers of some of the world's most beloved typefaces like Gotham and Knockout. You know, the The CSS Tricks logo, just it's just Gotham Rounded, all caps, CSS-Tricks. That's it. And I've used it for so long, I feel like it's striking. I feel like it's just coming into its own, really. I really like it still. But all the typography on CSS Tricks is also Heffler Co. fonts. Ringside, Sentinel, Operator. Ringside is the title. Sentinel is the serifed body copy. And I've only been using it now for, what's it been, 3-4 months? And I just love it. In fact, my own team just yesterday complimented me on the typography of the site and said, it's really, you know, I've been tweaking it forever. It's kind of, it's finally really beautifully come into its own. It's something I take really serious. And Operator Mono is just my favorite monospace font for code, you know? Really, it was one of the first ones out there that had the kind of slight cursive look for italics, which was just genius and has been copied many times since. I love it. So at typography.com, you'll find nothing but the highest quality fonts. They're screen optimized for the browser, complete families, deep character sets, clever features to help you solve design problems, you know? And then on the site itself, there's free tutorials and stuff to help you become a better typography. Oh, thank God I could use it. Download their fonts to self-host them, or it's $99 a year to get a cloud typography subscription, which lets you use the entire library for $99 a year. And you get 15% off that if you use coupon code SHOPTALKSHOW at checkout. Just one word, SHOPTALK at checkout. Typography.com/SHOPTALK gets you that deal. Incredible deal. Incredible fonts. Thank you for the sponsorship. Love it. So Google, we were talking about perf. Do you want to do that for a minute? Because this is a big deal for everybody, because you can't escape Google. You can't escape Google search engines. You can't escape needing to appease the Google bots in a way. And they're
drone copters that are flying over your house right now.
No doubt, right? Unmanned. Taking pics. Google said there's three performance metrics that we think are super important. And we're calling the group of them Core Web Vitals.
Vitals. We have vitals now.
And they're not. Here's what they're not. They're not how many requests does your page make? You know.
Darn it.
Yeah. You've been spending so long doing that. Yeah. They're different things, but they're interesting in that they're all like what the user experience is in a way. One of them is called CLS. Cumulative layout shift, meaning if your page does obnoxious stuff like it loads and then the ads come in slowly and push a bunch of crap around on the page, or you Ajax in some content and it pushes things around, you're essentially penalized for that. That's a bad metric. You should not do that. Or if you're going to do it responsibly in such a way that it doesn't cause the shifting. Fascinating. That's a core vital. And then the other two are like, you know, basically how fast it is, but not how fast does the request come back from the server. It's like, when can I start painting this site? What is the biggest area of this site ready to be painted? That's first the
contentful
metric.
Paint.
Yeah, but it's L. It's largest contentful. Oh, largest paint. Meaning not the first thing that renders, but the first thing that renders that matters, which is a fascinating little distinction. And then first input delay is like, okay, you painted fast, but can I actually use it? Can I actually type into something? Can I scroll? Can I use your forms? If I can't, then, you know, or whatever, that needs to be factored in too. So it's those three things, which just makes a lot of sense to me. It's cool to see WebPerf evolve to what matters to users rather than academic stuff like how many requests are there and what's the, you know, the how fast does it come back from the server and stuff. All stuff that matters, but it's like that's secondary to what it feels like as a user. So anyway, we could talk more about that. The big news was twofold. It was Core Web Vitals are going to be used for SEO. So we're telling you that to your face. Look at these three vitals because it's going to affect your SEO. And the other lead was we're removing the AMP constraint from the carousel, which means that if you kick butt with these vitals, we'll put you in the carousel now, which is wild. I don't know when exactly, but soon.
Well, no, I mean, that's going to matter to people. I think they said it was like over 6 months. Like they gave people a 6 month, because they did this thing where they shifted to Google Panda or whatever. They basically changed the algorithm overnight. surprised. Mm-hmm. And then businesses went out of business because they were basically doing shady stuff to get, you know, boosted. But I think they have a new like 6 or 12 month ranking thing or whatever. So, before they implement new ranking or something like that. But, yeah, this is big news. There's some like vagueness, you know, like, is all layout shifting bad? Like if my comments come in late, that triggers a layout shift or something? Was that bad? Or, you know, I was doing the best I could there, you know, or something like that. Like, cause it adds a sidebar or something like that. I don't know. But like, I think there's a few questions I have, like, and these are relatively new, like things like LCP, largest contentful paint, and CLS, cumulative layout shift. Like these are little new things, and they weight pretty high on the ranking. And so I'm very, I don't know, in a world of like hero units and stuff like that, like LCP is going to be a hard one. Like, cause every website has a large contentful paint that's slow. Like it's a hero unit. It's called hero units. So like, how are we, you know, that's going to downvote a lot of people, you know, and change a lot of websites. So, I think that needs, you know, I'm curious to see how it shakes out, but it's very interesting to me.
It's also like, it's easy to get your brain cooking on this so hard and then get so worried. Well, we don't actually know what the full algorithm is. Your full SEO ranking is not just these three vitals. This is probably a tiny little sliver of
5% or something.
Yeah. I mean, I'd be surprised if it was that high, you know. The rest of it is who knows what other magic. If you have great content on the web, I assume this is practically irrelevant.
But if it can get you, if just this can get you in the search carousel, having good ones of these,
yeah,
and
that's huge.
You didn't have to build and maintain a whole AMP site, you know, yourself or like on a 3-person team or something like that, that's big news. So, yeah, I'm curious, you know, I think the AMP change is very, I don't, you, I know you went to a meeting, so you got to be political about it, but like, it seems to me very like damning in the sense that the AMP announcement was done by the Google search team, you know, and even people I had heard on the AMP core team didn't know, or like the AMP advisory board or whatever, didn't know that this change was happening or whatever, probably for like leaking news like means. But like this, you know,
what is your deal? Like, why didn't it come from the AMP team?
Well, it's very clear to me that AMP is a search technology, you know, and the only reason you'd ever implement it is for search.
We also heard from people on the AMP committee that they had no idea this was coming. So like, oh, cool, cool committee.
Yeah. Well, yeah, good thing we have transparency or whatever. So let's let it shake out. But I'm glad that AMP is no longer a requirement to be in the carousel, or it won't be in the future, because I think that's good for the web and its longevity. But I also just am like very, I don't know. I was very like, see this, like AMP, for the longest time, AMP is like, it's not about search. It's not about search. But then that news comes from search. Case closed, man. I'm friggin' iced tea over here. Like,
ka-chung.
take them down to the station.
I didn't that till now. I thought of the weird disconnect from the AMP team, but not that we heard about the AMP news from the search team. But it was kind of like the perf team too, because I was at a meeting and it was pretty good. I think they got a lot of kudos from a lot of people that have been highly critical for just being this open and advanced about what's going on and stuff. And it seemed like most of the people there were like, I don't think Google has an official perf team, but it felt like the unofficial perf team, or maybe they do, I guess, but I don't know. Paul Ehrlich wasn't there. Where's Paul? Come on. You too busy, man.
I know. But I, again, been like, whatever, giving the good faith take is like, I'm glad they are being more open-minded about the search carousel. The bad faith take is, I called y'all on your bullshit.
you know, AMP was criticized a lot early on, then they put the committee together, whatever you think of that. But the idea was to have some kind of, I don't know, community input and perhaps even a little oversight, although I don't know that it ever manifested that way. And then I heard some calls for like, this should have that too. Like, can this be open? Can this be opened up a little wider for having kind of a guiding committee or something? And I just, when I first heard them, I'm like, there's no way. It just doesn't feel like the same kind of thing. It's not a technology. It's how you measure technology. But it matters, though, because the way that those measurements are used then become part of the algorithm. But it's like the algorithm's never been open, not even a little bit, not even a tiny hint. That's the secretest thing. And though you think KFC's original recipe chicken is secret, that's just way more secret.
Well, and I mean, these three numbers are going to launch 1,000 project managers, or, you know, like, these will change products and businesses, like their whole strategy just around these three numbers, you know, because it's all we know. So it would be nice if other people were involved, but, you know, I guess Google's a private company, or, you know, they can do whatever they want. But anyways, it would be nice to, whatever, if there's a bit more,
openness to this. Seeing,
I think so. I mean, I think it added value to the AMP community. The AMP project. I think it was like, okay, like, at least there's people overseeing this. What I saw sort of as a potential power grab for the web, you know, or something, or potentially. I think that was one of its criticisms. But I think and I know people were very well intentioned on the AMP project. I don't want to dismiss that. But, you know, in that AMP advisory committee, I think a lot of people posted, I forget the name of the person I'm thinking of, but they were like, all the feedback is we only use AMP to get on the search carousel, you know, like, and so that tells you a lot about the motivation of projects using it. And I heard a lot of publishers be like,
maybe the AMP team is stoked then. Maybe the AMP team is like, okay, now we're going to get people using this technology that want to be using it for some other reason, you know, that they're into the tech of it, not because they are forced over to this community against their will. So I guess I'd be stoked if I was on the AMP team. Like, now we're going to get more kind of real, true users.
Validity. Yeah, you get more validity for sure. So anyway, I guess I'm... Again, I have good faith takes and bad faith takes, whatever y'all want. I got both.
Dave, that's why you're great for radio. Which Dave do you want?
Which Dave do you want? Do you want? Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I could. Yeah. Do you want, I don't know, Kai Rizdahl Dave, or do you want Alex Jones InfoWars Dave? I got them both. They're both here.
Let's just do this last one, or this first question by Waylon Walker, because this gets into some perf stuff that might be relevant and interesting here. He says, I have a site I built from an old school static site generator. He called it MakeDocs, MKDocs. Never heard of it. Maybe I'm too new school for that. It has a pretty decent theme. It has great built-in search, which is fascinating to me. I wonder how that works. All I do is give it Markdown, and it makes it so a static site generator. Fine. Lighthouse, though, is really crapping on the performance of the thing, as there is a ton of duplicate CSS, unused CSS, unminified CSS and JS, yada, yada. So bad Lighthouse score. I feel like at this point, there should be some sort of CLI tool that I can do a bunch of optimizations, you know, like bundle my stuff, minify my stuff, inline the critical stuff, optimize the images without much effort. But I can't seem to find one that doesn't require me to doing a bunch of manual work. At this point, I feel like I should I just take what I get from the tool or whatever, or should I start over with a different tool that helps me with those kind of things? It feels like it's kind of conflating some things, right? Like, why would it? Like, isn't it kind of okay that a static site generator doesn't get into your perf concerns? Like, do you want your static site generator optimizing your images for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even like 11D, which kind of, at least right now, has kind of notoriously good perf, or just ends up being kind of very performant, and they kind of enforce a performance culture. Zach does.
Sure.
Zach Leatherman. You know, even that, a lot of the perf, it doesn't come with a CSS processor. You got to bring, that's BYO. It doesn't even have an HTML minifier that I know of, or maybe there's a plugin for that. you know, that stuff's BYO. So even if you switch platforms, like going to 11e, which I'd super recommend, but anyway, but even if you switch platforms, a lot of that stuff is BYO. So you may, I don't know, you may want to think about what you could do. You could probably do this in a gulp task is what I was thinking. You know, but you'd have to get your, whatever, your five gulp plugins and, you know, just go through your folder of output from MakeDocs.
And you got to make sure that that plays nice too, because then your gulp probably is like, first do MakeDocs, then do other things, or do them one or the other. Don't have them do it at the same time and get all confused. You know?
Yeah, do like a serial process. And so, you know, you could do that. And my advice would be work on the CSS and JS first. Like CSS is kind of easy. Tends to be, there's like, you know, clean CSS is a good plugin for that on NPM. So you could just run that. That could be an NPM task that you do and just generate a minified cleaned CSS file. And then get into the JavaScript, which there's a lot of tools there. Parcel can do it pretty quick for you. Then I don't know, get into what, like, and then get into the HTML. Minifying HTML can sometimes be super bad.
This is what I would do. I think that's probably what I would actually do is all the stuff you're describing, you know, like I'm going to do this myself, you know, but here's another path forward. Okay. One, just throw Cloudflare in front of it. Boom. Now you got, it'll minify your HTML, CSS, JavaScript right there. It's a flip of a switch. So you do nothing on your side. You just let it do it. So that's problem solved there. And then the thing about having too many different files. Well, guess what? Your core web vitals, it don't care about how many files you have. That's not a metric that matters anymore. And because you have Cloudflare in front of it, turn on HTTP2, so it's guaranteed that your site is being served with HTTP2, which has way further less penalties for serving multiple files. Who cares if your CSS is split up into three files? It's now irrelevant. So you can stop caring about that too, and then check your score against Lighthouse, but the new Lighthouse, like the one that's in Canary now, that's using Core Web Vitals and not the old stuff, and just see how you do then. So now you've done no work. You know, all you did was flip on a couple of switches of Cloudflare, and you got like most of this stuff handled for you. Now, if the images are a problem, maybe sign up for a Cloudinary account or an ImageX account and put that URL in front of those images so that it grabs it, does the optimizations for it, and caches it too. So now you're not manually writing some optimize images gulp task thing. You just throw your originals in there, and at the URL level, it's handling the optimization and serving it in the right format too. Lighthouse will love you for that. So like that, these are some no work efforts to get pretty good perf for nothing, you know. And then your SSL is going to be super high quality, all that stuff, you know.
Hey, you're probably right. If the thing you care about is the Lighthouse score, yeah, that's a great, I mean, it's a shortcut, but it's a great one. So you could do it for sure. I'm very much on the tinker side.
Tinker,
I'd rather do it
tinker,
all by tinker. Hand. And that's, again, that's like Dave Rupert's biggest fault is like, I should just be using like normal crap and like frameworks, but I don't. So that's my fault. Sorry, everybody.
I'm just in this middle ground where I like, a lot of times I'll do both, you know, I'll get it all situated and then I got Cloudflare in front of it anyway and flip those switches on too, you know, but maybe I won't forever.
Yeah, I might have to do some like metaphysical exploration on why I feel this way. Like,
Netlify does a lot of that too. Like,
Netlify is doing a lot of it for me. And they have this new thing called Git LFS, or, well, you can switch over to Git LFS. And they actually do image optimization for you on Netlify.
It's beautiful, dude. Bingo. It's so cool. I've used it too. It's a little, I was going to use it for this new site I'm working on, but then if you have like multiple contributors to the site, they have to set it up too. And it's like, it's not that bad, but you need like some CLI. It's like a little, it's not beautifully simple to set up, you know, if you want contributors and then they go to upload an image and they don't have it set up, they're like not going to be able to git commit and stuff. And it's going to be like, ooh. So I'm like scared of it here and there. But once you have it set up, it's cool because you can be like, I don't know, serve me the 500 pixel version of it. Done. You know, we're doing this at CodePen 2 and we're using the not just workers to cache the images, but we're sending it. If you serve an image through Cloudflare, you have all those same URL parameters. You know, okay. You got the, do you want to serve it with format auto? Like, meaning it's not as fancy as Cloudinary's, but it'll serve it in WebP if it can, which is huge. Sometimes WebP is 10% of a JPEG. That's crazy. Yeah. Without even resizing it. Then you have the resizing parameters, you have cropping parameters, you have all that stuff. So we're just about to roll that out on CodePen, is whenever you upload an image, the URL that you have for it is CDN backed for finally. That's already live, but to have the URL parameters too. And that's what Netlify's Git LFS does too, is you have all these URL parameters you can pass. And that's how Cloudflare works, is how ImageX works. All of the companies do this now. If you have an image asset, you should be able to, at the URL level, do anything you want to the thing. And nobody does it more advanced than Cloudinary because they've been at it longer, but everybody has hopped on the train. You know, like if you have an image asset and it's hosted on us, you should be able to ask for it any which way.
Which is kind of cool because, I think so on my website, I was doing 100s on the Lighthouse score, and then Lighthouse updated on my dev browser, jerk. And now I'm getting dinged on image sizes, you know? And I hate generating multiple images and all that and like, you know, picture sizes and all that crud. I hate that stuff. I love picture element. I hate the sizes part. Not everyone who worked on it did a very good job. But I just personally, I'm just like, the syntax is like a lot of action. So, but if I could just, do these sizes and I actually never have to even do it. I just make a little short code that does it, you know, and it adds the question mark, W equals 480,
yeah,
W
man.
Equals 562, hell W yeah. equals... And it's done for me? Good night. That's awesome.
It's meant to be automated. I feel like that should have been a message almost earlier on in all that, is that this syntax is very verbose. It's not, it's for you to understand as a human being, but it's not for you to write as a human being. It is meant to be abstracted.
I still have nuanced arguments about like HTML should not depend on a build step or automation. But that's just me. That's just me. But anyway, now I'm getting dinked, man. I'm getting dinked. I got 92 on best practices. Oh, man, 99. I'm just one element is found on largest contentful paint. Getting me again, man. I'm telling you. So, all right. Well, hey, we should. This ended up pretty good.
I enjoyed it.
Talking a lot about WebPerfy little episode. So I think that was good. Thank you, dear listener, for downloading this in your podcatcher choice. Be sure to star heart favorite it up. That's how people find out about the show. Follow us on Twitter at ShopTalkShow for tens of tweets a month. If you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs and get a brand new one. People want to hire people like you. Maybe like this company.
Hey, do we got any designers in the old Shop Talk Show listener universe? If so, we got a pretty cool job opening to let you know about. They're looking for a senior product designer for mobile at Automattic. So you know Automattic, they're an all remote company, the makers of WordPress.com and a whole bunch of other apps too. You know, we talk about things like WooCommerce and Jetpack and stuff around here. Automattic has a number of mobile apps like the WordPress mobile app, which I use all the time. Sometimes I'll pop it open to like look at our comment queue, for example, at CSS Tricks for approving comments and the like. It's a really nice full-featured app for WordPress. Pretty cool, but they have, the Tumblr app. After they bought Tumblr, Simple Note, WordPress VIP has an app. So they are, they're looking for a senior designer to join their mobile team, work on these apps, and collaborate with over 60 other designers across all their various products. So these are native apps for Android and iOS, and there's a role for you there. So check it out. We'll put a link directly to this job posting in the show notes.
And Chris, do you have anything else you'd like to say?
ShopTalkShow.com. I was going to intercept that comment with a worker and change it on the fly, but I didn't.
Hey, do it in post. Black Lives Matter. Bye.